702. Education.
15 minutes after 10 o'clock, Ian Calvert is founder at Further. Ian, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Aubrey. Nice to be with you.
Further, what is that?
So Further, I guess it's a platform that helps early stage entrepreneurs. And I think the intro that you gave just before the break there, I think you're right. Not everybody's cut out to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But those people who've started on that journey and have seen an opportunity, and particularly, as you say, we work primarily with social entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs who are trying to solve a problem in society, in their community, but trying to make a living out of it. And that's a tough journey. And so what Further provides is a sort of development path that focuses a lot on their personal development, so really focusing on the human being and some of those sort of fundamental mindsets and critical skills. We provide then more technical training in terms of how to build a business model around your idea, and a lot of the sort of storytelling skills that an entrepreneur needs. But importantly, it's a long term journey. So we work. It's not, you know, in the world of enterprise development, often there's a focus on sort of short term training programs and box ticking exercises,
yeah.
And really to get up to a sustainable organization, let alone a sort of scalable organization, it's a long journey. So we work over extended periods of time with these entrepreneurs. But I think the most important thing that we do is while we call it a platform, it's not just a series of training programs. It's a community of like-minded entrepreneurs and relatable entrepreneurs. You know, we've worked for the last 8 years and across a number of programs, and that community of entrepreneurs that we work with are now the most valuable asset to the guys coming into the programs, because it's that relatable experience. You spoke earlier about lived experience. And so for a young girl or guy in a community wondering whether they could do this, you know, whether they've seen this idea and but have they got what it takes and all the self-doubt that goes with it. When they can connect with and be inspired by people who come from similar backgrounds, they might be solving different challenges, but they come from similar backgrounds, they might be a couple of years ahead in the journey, but they're kind of relatable role models. And so what we put a lot of focus, a lot of our coaches that we bring to the program are entrepreneurs themselves who've been through this journey.
Yeah.
And so really, in a nutshell, that's what Further is. But gradually, we're expanding our focus beyond just social entrepreneurs. We're doing a lot of work with creative entrepreneurs now, artists, creatives, who are trying to find a way of commercializing their talent. And we work in different areas, but it all, I suppose, again, linking back to your passionate segment before I came on, you know, the youth, particularly now, have been let down by the politicians, you know, and ironically, it's some of the politicians who were the youth in 1976 who are now getting in the way of
mm-hmm.
today's youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether people are going to be entrepreneurs or not, and as you say, not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur.
You know, Ian, I have these conversations quite a lot because I have not yet seen any other solution at the moment than to try and inspire a spirit of entrepreneurship in this country, because I have lost confidence in our politicians. I've lost confidence in their willingness to govern for the people. I've completely lost confidence in that aspect. So I'm yet to be proven wrong by our politicians. But they are the people that hold the purse strings of the fiscus. They hold our tax money that should be going into the kinds of initiatives that Further is involved in, that should be providing more job opportunities by allowing more entrepreneurs to be operational in our economy so that those people can employ people. President Cyril Ramaphosa recently in his State of the Nation address made history by saying that, listen, we need to have more businesses functioning so that we can have more people employed by those businesses, which was a fundamental ideological departure from the way that he's been thinking. And I understand from many young people who get irritated, particularly who, you know, who are in, you know, certain organizations who say, but this conversation, this constant conversation about entrepreneurship is letting government off of the hook, right? We, you know, I'm saying, sure, you do that job. Go ahead. I'm with you. I agree with you. But we got to do something now about the people that don't have a means of making a living now. And for me, at this point, it's entrepreneurship. So let's talk about what entrepreneurship is in a relatable manner in the context that we find ourselves in, Ian.
Yeah. Aubrey, you're so right. I think, unfortunately, the term entrepreneurship, you know, what it's filled with sort of images of the Elon Musks of the world and the Richard Bransons and the Patrice Mosseppis who've scaled to these big heights. And yes, I suppose the world needs those as role models in some ways, not in all ways, but role models that you can succeed as an entrepreneur. But really, what the country needs is not these sort of big success stories of billion rand companies that employ thousands of people. Yes, that would be great. But what we really need is hundreds of thousands of small businesses that employ maybe two, maybe just two or three or four or five people.
Yeah.
But importantly, they are in the communities. They create economic movement. They create a circulation of money within those communities instead of us worshipping these sort of big, shiny urban hubs that we believe are the financial capitals.
Yeah.
And so much of the language, and we face it the whole time, you know, the language is all around, you know, you're a startup tech entrepreneur, you've got to scale, you're looking for Series A investment. That's one part of it. But the other part is, particularly for the youth, is having that mindset. And it's hard, given the crushing poverty that so many of the youth look in and the fact that they don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Yeah.
But if you can, if we all can try and develop in them that mindset to see opportunity, to develop a kind of tolerance for the uncertainty and think, right, where is the opportunity in all of this? And if they can find something, and it doesn't have to be, you know, something that's never been done before. You know, yes, a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, the root of the word entrepreneur comes from the French of taking from in between, namely finding a gap in the world.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that. You know, there are lots of small businesses, whether it's young women running nail salons or young guys running courier companies or even, you know, car washes. You know, those are viable business models that people have proven have worked, that can work. And provided you give people the right mindset, and then once you've got the mindset right and the self-belief, then you can teach them the technical skills.
Yeah.
So we need those hundreds of thousands of small businesses. And you're right, we would love for government to be kind of enabling that. And there are programs out there, which, as I say, are sort of skills training programs, but so often they are programs that are done sort of to the youth.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they line them up,
yep.
They give them the training, they tick the boxes, they get the BE certificates. And unless those young people who are going in there have at least got, you know, and again, it's a much used phrase, that sort of growth mindset, that they can change their circumstances, they can change the way they think, that they are masters of their own destiny. Until you do that work up front, a lot of the skills training is like pouring water into a leaking bucket. So you've got, and again, we have no kind of magical wand for this. we just got a kind of a lot of experience, and we've seen how if you put the right support around young people and you give them the community and you give them relatable role models and you help them realize that they're capable of far more than they think they are, then they stand a much better chance of succeeding.
I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs. I'm an entrepreneur myself. I'm involved in a number of initiatives. I am in a business or in a company that values entrepreneurial thinking in those of us that are in this space. So, for example, as a presenter on this particular platform, I have to behave entrepreneurially. I've got to be pitching all the time to my bosses ideas about how this particular program can continue to be relevant. I've got to pitch it like an entrepreneur. I've got to constantly be making sure that the team that's employed by this particular show is employed. Otherwise, you know, so constantly, I've got to be thinking entrepreneurially, not just as somebody who simply comes to a job. I'm mentioning this, Ian, because I think that needs to be part of the conversation, that the entrepreneurial spirit isn't just for people that are going to start businesses. It might even be for employees themselves who are in spaces where they've got to start thinking entrepreneurially. And then we go into that conversation about how do we start thinking entrepreneurially. I want you to address the issue of funding, because I hear a lot of people say, no, we need funding. I don't know. We'll have that conversation. But before we do that, let me take a call from Piri in Alex. Hi, Piri.
Hi, good evening, Bob. Yeah,
good evening to you, Piri. What's on your mind, sir?
Thanks. It was in the year of 2020 during COVID, when I was working for a small NGO in Joburg here, and where I got retrenched because the company ran out of funds.
Yeah.
So I then got depressed for quite a while, for about 3 or 4 or 5 months or so, looking for employment, couldn't find. And then I came up with an idea to start a sort of a small venture, because my background is accounting and audit in those times. So I started with a very small establishment in the backyard of my dad's RDP house here in Alex. And I started an IT or an internet kind of a cafe and printing and, you know, office work.
Yeah.
And perhaps you have no idea how many people I have sort of been trying to assist since then. You know, the young, the learners, the unemployed, to just draft a CV and to just look for employment online. It's been crazy, perhaps. And I think that, you know, it's people like myself, you know, not that I blow my own horn, but that really need assistance. You know, if the government and the municipalities can be able to identify, you know, those that are studying something in the backyards of, in the garages of their homes, you know, to assist a lot of people. It's those people that need to be given the boost, you know, to be encouraged. Because, you know, I look at the people here in Alex in the streets, you know, those that are unemployed, those that are destitute, don't know where the next meal will come from. And I just feel we sometimes sitting on a ticking time bomb, because these people, you know, they have no future. But it's those that I try to help here to give some sort of a hope, you know, to look for employment. So I'm more like a social entrepreneur, so to speak, because I look at a person like, clearly they don't have money for printing and for photocopying of CVs and stuff. I'm like, just come, let me do it. When you have employment,
when you speak of assistance, and by the way, I agree 100% with you that it's people such as yourself. So don't feel bad about blowing that horn, because it's got to be blown, right? It's people like yourself that need the assistance.
Yeah,
It's people like yourself that have made the leap, that are already involved, that have a concept that is already functional, right? There's already transactions taking place. It's people like yourself that require the assistance. But what are you talking about, Peter, when you say assistance? What exactly are you talking about?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. So the kind of assistance that we're really looking for is just to, you know, to be out there, because now I'm operating at the backyard of my dad's RTP house. So I feel like a lot of people don't really see. So my brother also has a store where he sells, you know, the quarters and the like here.
Yeah.
But it those, I've got like a few notice boards outside. You know, those people that come and notice that something's happening in the backyard, and they come and just, ask for assistance. So the kind of assistance that one would really be looking for is just to be able to be at the center of, the business district of our place here, where people can actually notice that you are there to do something, unlike when you're in the background, the issue of marketing as well, the issue, obviously, finance is something that you'd always need to be able to boost into, to buy equipment and to try to, help the person.
So Peter, I'm sorry, my brother, I'm pushing you so hard because I've got lots of callers and I want to take those calls. But if you had a magic wand, where would Peter be now if that assistance was there?
I live on the alongside the London Road here, the main street in Alex. If I had a magic wand, I would just jump off the road and have an establishment in Alex Mall.
Gotcha. Piri and Alex, much appreciated. Kanye, you're in Alberton. Hi.
Hi, Bro Aubrey. Thanks for taking my call, man. Sure. Very interestingly enough, back then, I can't remember when I started listening to a radio station. I think I was still in high school or varsity.
Wow.
Today, I'm able to sit in my car and talk to you. But
you're making me feel old, Kanye. All right, go ahead, man.
You know, I've been listening to you for the longest time, and your shows have always been very intriguing.
Thank you,
I think.
Much appreciated.
I'm an aspiring entrepreneur as well.
Yeah.
And when we speak entrepreneurship, I'm not going to lie, it's one of the conversations that I like being involved in.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate the show that you're actually having, whereby you bring individuals who can come, and we respect individuals who come out there and assist us, maybe with giving us critical thinking skills. I think the individual you were just interviewing just now spoke about the fact you would say they would bring someone from the community who's probably a couple of years ahead and would be inspired. But the truth is that we are not struggling with the inspiration. We are not struggling with the critical thinking skills. I've seen so many organizations out here in South Africa who offer us the skills that you'll be able to think properly like a businessman. Honestly speaking, as an aspiring entrepreneur, I don't think I need training on how to think and how to run a business.
Right.
I think what I need a lot is the access to the capital, the funding and stuff like that. If I can give you a story about myself. I've been speaking to the chief in Limpopo out there, and one of the areas that we've been looking into is going into farming. I've been speaking to AFCRI, Agri Enterprise. I've spoken to the Motipe Foundation, the IDC, etc. You can actually think of all these funding institutions that I've been trying to speak to, but I have not been getting access to the funding.
Yeah.
And if I can tell you that the chief has even granted me access to more than 20 hectares of land, I actually see your business plan. Your business plan makes sense and stuff like that. I think this is definitely one thing that would empower our community and things like that. With the cost of living being really high, I would believe that funding institutions should be jumping on every single idea that is actually what is involved to say that we need to create as much food as possible. Access to food is one of the things. What I'm even thinking, let me give an example. The gentleman that you're probably interviewing now is going to tell us that he's is going to equip us with critical thinking skills. I can tell you right now that because I know that I am lacking access to financing, I've been thinking, I'm like, how do I actually finance my project even though without getting access to financing from the government? I think the honest truth is that we need to start thinking to say that if we are going to come with these initiatives, the gentleman that you've been interviewing just now, we want to create a platform whereby we are able, where investors and actually potential entrepreneurs are able to sit down around round tables, you know, discuss financing, you know, fund projects within those roundhouses. If, let's say, it's government sectors that are coming into this, under one roof, come, let them tell us, what are we failing with? What are we not... What are we struggling with that does not lead to us getting that financing? You know, they must come and train us and actually increase our chances of getting access to financing. And thing of critical thinking, we can.
Yeah, let's hear what Ian has to say, because you've already preempted that. That's what he's going to say. But let's hear what he's got to say. But I hear you. I hear you that we need money. Yeah, we need money. But yeah. I want you to also think. Would you part with a lot of money purely on the basis of a business, just a business plan in this environment? I mean, let's say you had some money and somebody was coming to you purely on the basis of a good idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you would make that investment?
But can I quickly just answer that question, yeah. Aubrey, you know? The thing is that, hey, let's say I also do dream of becoming a venture capitalist one day in the near future, should I actually make some big bucks. I think one of the first things that I would need to do is to go and assess the viability of this project.
Sure. Hold on. I want to cut the thing short. The idea is viable, but it's still a concept.
Yes.
You have some money. You can have money. Would it be as easy as simply parting with a couple of hundred thousand rands because the idea is a good one, if you had the money?
No. Aubrey, the problem is that if I answer yes, you'll probably think I'm being biased. But the thing is...
No, I just want your answer. I just want you... Just give me an answer.
I honestly think that if it is viable and I can assess and I'm perhaps... part of the project as well, maybe having
I hear you, Kanye. Let me stop you there. Thanks, Kanye in Alberton. Anonymous is in Pretoria. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Anonymous.
Good evening to you and your listeners. Thanks for having me on the show.
Go ahead, sir.
So, I myself am an entrepreneur, and recently I've discovered that I've started looking in terms of my own capacity and whatever money that I have in terms of longevity. So I look at my money yearly, no more annually. And if you can look at your expenses every month and even cut out 400 or 500 rand per thing on a debit order, whether it be for a car, whether it be for some sort of insurance, wherever you can save money, and you look at it by annum. For example, you can make 40 grand for yourself extra in a year, or 4,000 rand extra a year, depending on how much you're saving, you know? And you can take that and put it towards your idea or the concept that you basically have. And as your previous listener said, when it comes to capital and finance or equity for these startups, it's something that if somebody brings you a concept and you've got it, the capital to do it, I mean, you've got to have the guns and go ahead, in my opinion. And you've got to be ready to take that risk. And along with that risk, it's not only about having the equity available. You need to partner with somebody that's got equity and bring people who can add value to the concept and basically birth it from CPA. I actually work in consulting, and my company does this type of things. We be a small venture capital by invite only company, but we welcome and open to ideas. I am anonymous, but if there's anybody
else. That's what I was thinking. I mean, you're anonymous. How do I make sure that people can come to you, especially my previous caller who says, listen, I don't need to be inspired. I don't need a different way of thinking. I need money. And that makes a lot of sense, man. You know?
And look, you.
Can I ask Ntateng to be able to give your contact details to those that ask for it?
Yeah, sure. Like, I mean, I can hook them up with an email address, and obviously they can send their proposals through. If we don't get back to them, obviously we didn't feel it was viable. But
all right,
ones that could possibly work, we will look at some avenues. I mean, I'm only 26 years old. I'm an entrepreneur myself.
Yeah.
I've been to 11 schools, Aubrey.
Yeah.
So that just probably tells you the whole story. I was not meant to be in the classroom.
Yeah.
And look, it's paid off, but it's been 99% failing and 1% winning.
Yeah.
And through that, I mean, every opportunity you take, like Richard Branson says, get an opportunity, you take it on, and I mean, you learn later, even if you can't do it. And that's exactly
what. Do you want to give me an email address very quickly? I want to go back to my guest.
Sure, 100%. Yeah. It's Ramez, Ramezze.
Yeah.
At.
Yeah.
ia-holdings.com.
Ramez@ia-holdings.com.
Yes, ia-holdings.com.
Dash-holdings.com. Anonymous, thank you very much for your call. Much appreciated. Ian, I allowed those calls to go. There's Ian. I allowed those calls to happen. So that you can get the sense of the kinds of conversation we've been having. People have been listening to these conversations for a long time, and I do emphasize mindset. I really do in these kinds of conversations. But you can't deny the concrete question that caller was saying. Look, I don't need mindset change. I don't need to be inspired. I'm inspired enough. I need some money now. And I hope that your guest isn't going to tell me about how to be inspired because I need money. I need money. And I remember there was a young entrepreneur who was doing very well in the sock industry, right, who was saying similar things to say, look, dudes, I don't want another seminar. I don't – give me money. How do we deal with that issue if indeed the thinking aspect is also critical?
Well, thanks, Robert. And the first to admit, you know, what we were talking about earlier is, you know, in the broader context of the youth, you know, that a lot of them are not in the situation that Kanye's in. You know, they might be Kanye 5-10 years ago, who he's obviously now. You know, he's walked the journey, he's passionate, he's trying to find the resources. The sad fact is those resources aren't easily accessible, but I think the point that you made is right, that there isn't actually, you know, there is capital out there, but capital, whereas entrepreneurs sort of embrace risk, capital does not embrace risk. And unless there are sort of viable business models, and or what the source of that capital, whether it be government funding, private sector funding, foundational funding, you know, they want some kind of proof of concept, which is hard to give. But I think the point that Anonymous or Ramiz, I think his name was, made is right, that what often the best kind of capital is the capital that isn't just writing out a check, but it's a check that comes with access to markets, that comes with business expertise, that comes with expertise in the right sort of technical areas, because otherwise the money, the provider of that capital doesn't have the confidence that the money's going to be used well.
Yeah.
And I think the point I'd like to make to Kanye as well, you know, it sounds like, I'm not sure Piri was talking about his internet cafe in his backyard, which is a great example of sort of replicating a successful business model. And yes, he needs capital to grow and to grow his marketing. With Kanye, it sounds like he's having lots of conversations with lots of people. But you, as an entrepreneur, you've got to think, well, if this isn't working, if I'm having these, you know, I'm say telling the same story and getting the same result, maybe I need to think, you know, I need to change my story, look at it from a different angle. But there is money out there for good ideas. And I'm not saying that it's easy to access. But as an entrepreneur, again, like Anonymous said, you get, for every one yes you get 20 no's. But unless you're learning from those no's, and we often talk about, you know, fall in love with the problem don't fall in love with the first solution that you come up with. You know, you really study where the opportunity is, where the gap is, and how do you need to adapt your business model or your business idea. Yeah, because if you're pitching the same solution the whole time and nobody's buying, then that maybe should be telling you something.
And I suppose we do need to have a conversation about how do we attract the capital with our idea. Because one of the things that I've learned in my entrepreneurial journey is that my believing that my idea is great, right, does not guarantee that the one who must part with money is going to have the same feelings towards my idea. Right. I can show the work that I've done in terms of I've spoken to this person who's willing to give me this resource. I have this team. But I do find that people are willing to support a peery who has already got a proof of concept operational than an idea, however good it might be on paper, that has not yet touched the tar yet.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the point I was making earlier. You know, we think of entrepreneurs as innovators who come up with brand new innovations and really creative new areas. Those are the hardest things to get funding for. Whereas there are lots of proven successes of internet cafes and communities. You look in, I'm based in Cape Town, you look at Luvuyo Rani, who started Sululu Technologies out as a literally selling computers and starting internet cafes out of the boot of an Opel Astra about 15 years ago. And he's proven that not only can you run a viable business, you can make a huge difference in your community. As you rise, you lift the community with you because you're providing services for them. So we don't need always to be finding these hugely innovative ideas. We just need to be replicating proven ideas, and then all of a sudden, I share your distrust of government institutions, but there's a big initiative coming through CEDA now around micro franchising. You know, if you can find, if you can be replicating an existing business with a sort of proven way of operating and a proven playbook, then you're far more likely to access funding, even if it might just be 30,000, 40,000.
So it appears that part of being an entrepreneur, especially an entrepreneur with some innovative, novel ideas, is not just to have the idea, but to communicate it in such a way that it attracts the attention of those that have deep pockets to invest in that idea. So it's not just the idea. It's how we communicate the idea in ways that are understandable to other entrepreneurs, to the point where they unlock their I nearly said mattresses, their cabinets.
Well, exactly. You said earlier, that in your daily life at the radio station, you're an entrepreneur and you're constantly, you use the term pitching.
Yeah.
So you're pitching to these people,
Yeah.
But also, it's basically storytelling. You know, an entrepreneur, every minute of every day is telling a story to someone. Whether that, and young entrepreneurs, often the toughest story you've got to tell is to your mother, who's saying, why aren't you putting some food on the table? So you've got to have a story, the story that you tell her about this vision that you have for your business. And then you've got to have the story that you tell, your bank manager. You've got to have the story. You've got to find that compelling way of telling that story.
Yeah.
And that's not just marketing. That's just not just sort of having the right flyers and leaflets and social media pages, but it's really working out what is the narrative, what's the structure of the story that I'm telling that is going to get people to give me a second look, and who's going to say, okay, there's something here. Let's sit down and look at this on a greater level. So that storytelling skill again, and Kenley might think he doesn't need help in storytelling.
See, for me, Ian, that is the fundamental difference between the employee and the entrepreneur. That constant storytelling and changing your story to suit the hearer, to suit the hearer, and hopefully that the hearer is an investor in one way or the other. So that's the difference between an employee and an entrepreneur. I'm willing to go even as far as saying that the guy who gets an investor the first time he says something perhaps hasn't yet been tested entrepreneurially.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, it's that old phrase, you know, the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expect a different result. Unless you've worked out, unless you have that, and Kenya will hate me for using the word mindset again, but unless you have that ability to say, okay, how did that meeting go? That didn't seem, you know, it seemed to, you know, they seemed to like me, but nothing has happened. So what do I do to shift it? How do I change? You know, that failed, so now how do I change and tell a different story? And it's that constant being willing to change and adapt your idea, and then change and adapt how you communicate that idea, that separates the really successful entrepreneurs from the non-successful ones.
Or 118-830-702, my guest is Ian Calvert, founder at Further. Let me quickly take this call from Deboko in Benoni. Hi, Debza.
Hi, Aubrey. Look at us.
Yeah, good. Thanks, man. Go for it.
Good. No, man, Aubrey, I must say, I'm really trying to find a correlation between the premise of your debate as well as and the content of the discussion.
Wow, the premise of my debate. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What do I mean? I remember now when you started off, you said this is going to be some kind of a solution to the unemployment crisis. So by saying that, the assumption is that there's no startup capital. So I was hoping that the approach to this thing is going to be that there's no fund. I mean, there's no startup capital, and these are the sources of funding available. Because now the problem with the business plan, what's normally required there is projections. And you cannot project something, or you cannot admit, like, future sales or future revenues if you don't have some kind of historical information. So the problem is the funders or the capitalists, they need some kind of a track record, and rightfully so. But then for you to have a track record, you must have been in the field for the past couple of years. And for you to be in the field, there must have been some kind of funding. So here, the problem that we normally face, especially from the township, is there's no track record. In fact, a lot of businesses are informal, even if you've been in business for years. But in the fact that you've been informal, it means you have no track record. Therefore, you cannot make projections for you to say.
So how do we create a track record would be the question.
I was hoping that the content of your discussion would
ask the question. Why don't you ask the question? Why don't you say, I understand that if I am in an informal business, I don't have the formal structures for creating the historical track record that I need to be able to attract the founding. How do I do that? I think that's your question, right?
Yeah. Let me just quickly respond to what you just said. The problem with being formal is it's highly costly in South Africa. I'm not sure in other countries. Like, you can try to be formal, but then, for instance, if you're running a business in your backyard, if you want to be formal and you're applying for instance, a certificate of acceptability, they will ask to rezone. And rezoning is extremely costly because you need to adhere to certain conditions.
So can we go back to the problem and how we can solve it? The problem is that under the current state of affairs, in order for you to attract the funding that you need to have some sort of track record. And in order to have that track record, you need certain formal structures which are expensive. The question that I think you are asking is how, in that context, do I create a credible set of data that is going to attract the funding?
Perfect.
Ah, well, let's ask the question. Let's ask the question. Debza in Benoni, much appreciated. Ian, I think it's a very, very fair question.
It's a great question, Audrey. But I think there's two track records, and you know, I fully understand. You know, and most of the entrepreneurs we work with are working in the informal sector, in the townships, in the tough community. So I really do have a sort of an empathy and understanding for that. And it is difficult to be able to provide, you know, neatly audited financials and neatly audited sort of historic tracks. But as any investor or funder says, there's two things you look at. You look at the jockey and the horse. Yeah, and so the horse, which is the business, might not have a full set of financials. It might not have the proven track record. But any investor or any funder worth their salt, they'll see beyond that to see, okay, well, you've managed to be providing this product or service in your community. You've got certain traction. You've got that market fit with what you're doing, even though you haven't captured it and you're still, you know, running it out of your personal bank account. But we can see this traction there, right? So we can see this traction there. So that's the horse. But the jockey, so you as Tiboko or Kanye, you know, tell me about yourself. What are the things that you've done in your life to overcome the obstacles? And I know that sounds really patronizing because there's so many obstacles in those communities. Mm. But any funder looks at both. They look at the person, the jockey, and they look at the horse. So you've just got to try, again, to tell the story in as compelling a way to say, I am somebody that you can trust your money with. And my business has the potential. And any funder worth their salt will be able to see that. The one thing I do want to say, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of the work we do is with so-called social entrepreneurs, so entrepreneurs who are solving a problem. And often nowadays, there's been a big resurgence or big sort of increase in that sector. And your access to capital there has a broader base, because then you are talking to some of the big corporate foundations who are some of the partners that we work with. Because if they can see that your theory of change is happening, so they can see that, you know, you've said, you've got an idea that if we provide this, if we do this, if we provide this service or this product to this community, it has a positive impact. Yeah, and you know, you look at the recycling industry. You know the recycling reclaimers, the waste pickers. Mm. They're all entrepreneurs. You know, they
absolutely.
You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yep.
So there, you know, the organisations that are running that, we work with in one of our programs, Mpakati Recycling Hustlers, which is an amazing organisation based in Soweto, and they. What they do in return for members of the community bringing waste to them, they will provide funerals, the equipment that people need for funerals, because the families can't, they might not have policies in place. So it's a trade exchange. So you bring us your trash and we'll give you the equipment, the cooking equipment, everything you need to provide a dignified funeral. And so that's to me is the most entrepreneurial thing, because it's an exchange of value.
Yeah.
So I use that as an example. But if you can prove that you're doing those things, if you prove that you're having an impact in your community, then there are a lot of grant funding programs, there are a lot of pitching competitions, there are a lot
I want to do this, Ian. I want to take one last call from Jack for the next 10 seconds. Then I need you to give your contact details for people who might have more questions. And then I'd like for us to have a follow-up conversation on this, because I think it's very, very important. Jack, your thoughts in 30 seconds. Sorry.
they were like an entrepreneur pitching for funding, right? Anyway, to summarize my thoughts, I think the difference between an entrepreneur and many talented people doing very well in business and corporates is, one, that belief that I've got a unique product or a unique way to deliver a product.
Yeah.
Secondly, is the madness to knock at all doors. be it finance, be it selling what you have to start the business, but you're not going to wait for someone's approval that this is a good idea, yes, funding or there's no funding.
Yeah.
You're going to do what it takes to get it done. Many talented people are stuck on the I'm waiting for funding, and they're there until they get it or they don't get it. In my view, they're not quite entrepreneurs. They are talented. They can take a good idea, develop it into a big business, but they lack that belief that I can make it happen and I'm going to make it happen.
Jack in Randburg, thanks very much for your call. Ian, your final, I mean, your contact details with the promise that we have to have a second part to this conversation.
Yeah, I'd love to have a second half to this conversation, Aubrey. So your listeners can visit our website, which is furtherimpact.co. So not .co.za or .com, just furtherimpact.co. They can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, at Further Impact. And if they want to drop us an email, they can send it to info@furtherimpact.co.
Ian Calvert, thank you so much, founder at Further.